A murder mystery, Clue on Stage. Based on the cult classic film, the play is a race around the board to solve the puzzle as the body count rises. Performances run through April 3rd. Tickets at racinetheater.org. This is WGTD-HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. You're listening to Community Matters, a program that explores and highlights various local issues and organizations. It's co-hosted by Len Iaquinta, a nonprofit manager, fundraiser, and consultant, Laura Sumner Kuhn, a former journalist with the Racine Journal-Times, who currently serves as an adjunct instructor at UW Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning. This is Len Iaquinta for Community Matters, and my guest this morning is Tamara Coleman, the executive director of the Shalom Center in Kenosha, the president of the Kenosha Community Health Center, and the former Kenosha School Board president for 2012 through 2018. And she was past president of the school board for 4 years. Good morning, Tamara.
Good morning. How are you, Len?
Very well, thank you. I'm so glad to have you with us to talk about some really important topics. We're going to be talking about the Kenosha Community Health Center. We're going to be talking about the Shalom Center's 40th anniversary. I can hardly believe it. And we're going to ask you to think back a little bit, Ms. Coleman, and give us the reflections of a former school board president and school board member for 6 years. Let's start with the news. This week, the Kenosha Community Health Center, of which you are the volunteer president, made a big announcement. Do you want to tell us about it, Ms. Coleman?
We did. And again, Len, thank you for the opportunity to even talk about these wonderful things. You're scaring me to make me have to reflect like that a little bit. Goodness, I'm going to have to put my thinking cap on. But Kenosha Community Health Center, I am honored to be the board chair. And yes, this week we were awarded $5.92 million. Gosh, blew our minds. We applied for this competitive grant a while back, and it was administered by the Department of Administration on behalf of Wisconsin, and we were granted it amongst a whole, you know, array of other health centers across the state. And this funding will allow us to build an infrastructure and help us. I don't know if you've heard in the news, you've read the article, but we have purchased the former Herzing University building on Washington Road. And it's going to allow us to expand our services, not move, Lynn, expand. That's a really important word there, expand. Our service numbers and our area and our capacity, all those wonderful things. So we will remain on Uptown on 63rd and we'll remain on 22nd Avenue. And this will just be a third expanded branch of our health center.
You have an outpost in Silver Lake too, I think, don't you?
We do. Thank you for that reminder. Yes, we can't forget about our county folks. Yes, and we have an outpost out there as well. And so again, this just gives us an opportunity to really expand our services and meet people where they are and just be able to continue to provide behavioral health, mental health, medical and dental services.
Now, I noticed in the news release and in the newspaper article that there is going to be a pilot program, that this isn't going to be just your normal federally qualified community health center using the same tired old model, that this is an opportunity for us to lead the way in the country, certainly in our region, by having integrated services. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about this pilot program?
Absolutely. Our CEO, Mary Omit, she's amazing, and she brought a different lens to the health center. We have individuals, and we found this out during the pandemic. We have individuals that need health care. However, you know, the prices of health care does not go down. You know, insurance prices keep going up. And so we're looking at a different integrated model. When you come in for dental, but maybe not for medical, but we know that the disparities are there and they exist. And so if I'm coming in, Lynn, for dental, and the dentist is working on my teeth, and as we're talking, it gives us an opportunity to talk about medical a little bit with them. And we can push them to the medical side, right? Don't just come into the health center for dental, if you're needing medical or behavioral health or any of our other services. So it allows us to have a one-stop shop where you can come in and you're almost like having a case manager. And you come in and you're saying, okay, you're here today at 1 o'clock to see your dentist. And at 1:30, you can see your medical provider. And then at 2 o'clock, if that's necessary, you can see your behavioral health. It's almost like a one-stop clinic. And we have to start looking at healthcare a little bit different than just, you know, just dental patients or medical patients. And we have almost 40,000 patients that we need to see and we deal with. But we know that the poverty level is much greater than that in Kenosha. And so we also have to reach out to those folks to say, hey, we have affordable healthcare, medical, dental, all right here to help you. So it's just a little bit different way of looking at the system.
This new facility is supposed to be able to handle an additional thousands of residents in the Kenosha area. And I believe that it's going to be providing services so far to nearly 17,000 residents in Kenosha, Racine, and Walworth counties just right now. It's really incredible.
Absolutely.
39,000 visits annually. 39,000 visits annually. Who knew?
Yeah, and we're not even scratching the surface, Len. There's still individuals and family members out there who don't know that there's affordable healthcare for them. And so just reaching those folks and making sure that they know that they have services available for them. And also, when you mentioned Racine, my goodness, I mean, we have Racine clients that come to us as well. So we want people to know that there's affordable healthcare available to them, and we're right there for them. And we have multiple locations they can go to.
And my understanding is that we're going to be making accessibility to all forms of healthcare, dental, this is what we consider standard medical, behavioral. We're going to make it much more accessible, not only just by making it in one place, but by making it a comfortable and accessible place for people to talk and get guidance and even get help with their prescriptions and access to the lowest cost prescriptions, because you're a federally qualified health center that gives you access to a special program for prescriptions too. Is that right?
All of that will be there, Len. It's all exciting. I can't wait for us to be able to really share and go really deep with all the services, but it also allows us to create additional partnerships, right? So we've had a Seal the Smell, a Seal Smell program in most of the schools. It allows us to expand those programs. Also, even like at the Shalom Center, you know, I've been working with Mary, our CEO, on expanding services even at the Shalom Center, right? Bringing those services, medical, dental, and behavioral health, right here to the homeless population, right? And so, you know, when you're in trauma, the last thing you're thinking about is going to see your dentist. but we have to bring those services here because it's needed, right? So again, creating those additional partnerships, and they're, my goodness, they'll be right down the street from the Shalom Center. So opportunities are endless, and it just gives us the platform to be able to increase our partnerships and do some amazing things at the same time.
And I think there's a role for all of us in the listening area of this station to play, and that is to make sure that people in our circle, maybe even in our own families, that need access to care are aware of the Kenosha Community Health Center, and they're going to be coming up with a new name for this new center that is more friendly, I understand. But
yes,
whatever it's called, I think we all have an obligation in our listening area to, through our organizations, through our spiritual affiliations, book clubs, whatever it is, to make sure that people get steered to get the help they need, because it's affordable and it's going to be increasingly available with less and less of a wait time to get access as well. Isn't that true?
That is very true. And we're, again, those partnerships are so important, and being able to broaden our horizon, I'll say, because we can also go to smaller businesses who are struggling with providing insurance, because insurance costs continue to go up. We want our employers in our community to also know that they may have identified workers or family members who need healthcare services. But we want them to be able to know that we exist, A, and B, that they can direct those family members that work in their, you know, their agencies or their companies right over to the health center, because we can help them whatever their needs may be. So it's just endless. I'm really, really excited. I there's so much more I want to share that I just can't yet. But Len, there's so much, and you're spot on. We're going through a rebrand And so excited to be able to share all that with the community in the very near future.
That partnership with small businesses suggests to me that it could be have a lot of leverage in the community, because we have a lot more numbers-wise, we have a lot more small businesses than large businesses. And the idea of staff recruitment, retention, and keeping them healthy and on the job and not infecting you and your customers is really an important. And we've learned through the pandemic that it's foundational to succeeding now. And so I think that this is maybe something that most of us haven't really thought about at all, but I think this could be a new area of cooperation that the chambers in our listening area and the CABA type economic development organizations should be starting to alert their members to in concert with yourself and the executive director to make sure that we can get the most mileage out of that. Because I have a feeling that that could have a real, real multiplier effect. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all. And I have to tell you, our CEO of the Health Center, Mary, she's amazing. And she thinks very strategic like that, Len. You know, it's a short wins, but it's also like a long-term plan, right? And so when she brought this idea to us, to the board, the full board, I mean, at first, you know, it's hard to wrap your head around all this, because it's like, well, we're the health center, we should be doing this, you know, but you have to look at it differently. And we learned very clearly through the pandemic, what people are really looking for, what people really need, and we have to evolve as a health center. And listening to health centers across the state, they're feeling that same pressure to have to do something different. We can't do healthcare, especially affordable healthcare, the same way we used to do it. You just can't. And so you have to keep being, you know, evolved, innovative, all those things. And Mary is definitely taking us down that path. And this new facility will allow us to do just that. And so I'm really excited for what's to come, and it's going to be amazing.
Well, I congratulate you, Executive Director Mary Wimmett, and all of the staff that put this together. I'm experienced with writing proposals for federal grants and how tough it is. And to be the fifth highest grant in a field of 23 recipients is very meaningful to me, at least, because I understand what that takes. And my hat is off. Off to you all. And my hat's off to you in another one of your roles, my lady of many hats, Ms. Tamara Coleman, my guest today on Community Matters. You are the executive director of the Shalom Center, which is the homeless shelter in our area, and has evolved tremendously in the 40 years that I've paid attention to it and watched it. I congratulate you and your previous directors and administrators and the volunteers who founded the organization way back then. And you must be very, very proud as a group of what you've accomplished. Tell us a little bit about your 40th anniversary coming up, please.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. So, wow, 40 years. 1982, it all started with an idea to help, and all they wanted to do was help people and change lives. And that's exactly 40 years later, we are building hope and impacting lives right here in Southeastern Wisconsin. And so this April, we want to kind of celebrate this amazing milestone. I like to say it's a evening reception, highlighting our history, saluting our present, and then preparing for our future as a nonprofit organization. And so on April 7th, at UW Parkside in the Student Center Ballroom, we're going to have a wonderful anniversary reception from 5:30 to 8 p.m. At about 6:15, 6:20, we will then have a small presentation, and it'll be a very brief presentation, but it's going to be a huge, impactful presentation, because we're going to be displaying some things that we think the community should be aware of. And we're going to be making a huge announcement. And I'm sorry, Lynn, I can't make it on your show. I got to hold it in. I'm dying to let it all out. But April 7th, I will let it all out, because we're going to be marching on as an amazing organization. And we've got some amazing things that we want to share. And so we'll be cheering up 40 years on that evening. And we invite the community to come out and join us. It's $40 per person. There's a theme there, right, Len? 40, 40.
I got it.
Yeah. Did you get it, Lynn? And so we would love for everyone to come out and just celebrate with us. We'll have some silent auctions and some raffles and some amazing food. And it's an open bar. That's important to tell people, you know. And we're just really excited because we want to thank the community for all of their support. But we really want to share this announcement with the community. That's going to really not only impact the families that, and individuals that we serve every day, but this entire community. And so we hope that everyone will come out and help us celebrate.
Well, I've got my tickets already. And full disclosure, I also have sent in a little extra gift because I really believe in this organization, and I'm very happy to give it some financial support. So I'll have to bring my notepad too, I guess, tomorrow. Is that right?
You may have to, because there might be some press present, and I don't know. I heard the governor might be there, and I know the mayor, and we'll have a new county exec. And yeah, it's going to be a huge announcement, and we really want the community. I mean, you want to be the first to hear about it, Len, right? So you better
yes.
be a pad and paper so that you can, you know, write it all down, because it's going to be big, and we're really excited. We've been holding it in, and but very excited. I have an amazing board of directors who is extremely supportive of this agency. And Len, we have board members that have been on the board, believe it or not, 25 years.
There's a lot of commitment there.
Yeah, a lot of commitment. So we're excited.
My guest on Community Matters this morning is Ms. Tamara Coleman. She's the executive director of the Shalom Center, headquartered in Kenosha. She's the president of the Kenosha Community Health Center, which serves this region. And she's a former Kenosha School Board president. And we'll get to the school board a little bit later in this program. But now we're focusing on Shalom, and we're all excited, and I'm salivating now about wondering about this big announcement that you've teased me with, Tamara. But that's not all. I mean, you've been doing your normal work now for quite some time. You've been executive there for quite some time. You've made a lot of changes. You want to just tell us a bit of an update? It's been quite a while since you've been on the air of this station. Give us an update about what's going on.
Absolutely. So over the last 3 years, as you know, we moved from 63rd, and we've been in this new building now since 2017. It's very hard to believe that. Well, in 2019, we decided to consolidate our programs and take our pantry that was on Sheridan Road and move it over here to this 39th Avenue location where we already were with our shelter. So for the first time in 2020, for the first time in the history of Shalom Center, all of our programs were under one roof, our shelter, our soup kitchen, and our pantry. So we added on the 10,000 square feet, and we have our pantry now connected. On March 2nd of 2020, we had a wonderful grand opening of our new pantry. And then on March 17th, the world shut down. So we're really looking forward to opening our pantry back up, which will happen in May. And we're really excited about that, where we can go back into shopping. So we've been preparing for that, as well as our shelter. We have expanded our shelter a little bit, and we now have a complete new wing of our shelter that's just for our single women. And so now we have a single women's side, a single men's side, and then our family side. And we didn't have that when we first moved into our shelter. Our men and women were kind of just in one large area. When we were able to add on our pantry, we kind of took another wing and added on in just a separate area for our women, which has been very successful. And we were able to increase our capacity of women in our shelter from 10 women to almost 21. So that was huge for us. So our pantry, our soup kitchen, we're now doing some food programs with Crabtree Residential. We cook their nightly meals for those individuals that are living in the residential facility at Crabtree. And that's new for us, kind of a catering thing we're doing. So we just keep evolving. We keep meeting the community where they are with needs and trying to help fix those needs and those gaps. However we can, Len, as long as it's under the umbrella of sheltering food and resources, right? Because we don't want to duplicate services, but we also want to make sure that our families that need us are here and know that we're here for them.
And you play a connecting role to other services.
We do. Thank you for asking about that. So during, so we are part of the Emergency Services Network. We're very actively involved in that. And we also are part of the Wisconsin Balance of State, which is a continuum of care group of agencies that represent shelters or food pantries or such. And so we are part of that with Women's and Children's, Connection Human Development Services, and the Sharing Center. So the four of our agencies make up our continuum for Kenosha County. And so it's a no wrong door approach, meaning if you go into any of those agencies, we all coordinate our services to ensure that your needs are met and that we can get you to your next best place. And that looks different for each person, Lynn, which is why case management is so important, which all of our agencies have.
Now, you mentioned the reopening of the pantry for one thing, and because of the pandemic, I haven't been able to tour and see these new additions at your facility. I can only imagine what they must be like, and they sound really very meaningful and significant for your capacity and for the comfort of your guests. Now, what about the food pantry? You said it's going to make a shopping experience. What are you talking about?
Yes, I'm sorry. I should have been clearer, Len. So our pantry is a self-select pantry. We're free choice, which means it's almost like a Woodman's, Len. You get a grocery cart and you go up and down the aisles and you grocery shop. I grocery shop for myself. I pick my own food, right? No one tells me what I'm going to eat. I go and get the foods that I want. And that's the kind of respect that we have for individuals that need our pantry. So we're a self-select free choice pantry. When the pandemic hit and we weren't allowing in-person shopping, we went to a drive-through model. So we have a huge carport outside. People can drive up and they just pop their trunk. They check in with our guest services and then their cars are loaded for them. So they don't even get out of their car. We have decided now in May, we're gonna go back to self-select, free choice back into the pantry with a little twist. And so we're gonna do some online ordering that you'll be able to do. Will allow for some appointments where you can schedule your appointment. Some fun, really innovative ways of giving food. Again, you gotta evolve. You can't just keep doing the same old thing, right? And people are looking for new ways to get their food. We're even looking at toiling some options of maybe delivering food. I don't know. We're just looking at all different options. But right now and come May, we want to be able to have people come inside and begin to pick their own food again. That's really important to us, to let people choose the food that they're getting versus us just packing it for them.
Well, this has a lot to do with the individual's personal dignity and a sense of agency. And it doesn't mark people as being different subject to rules and restrictions as if they need to be infantilized in the course of giving them help. And I think that we've done that sometimes in the bad past of our human development services agencies. And we've realized that that's really not the right way to treat people.
No. And you have to almost, I've been saying for years that, our pantry is, yes, we give food, but we're really a resource center that happens to just also give food. And so with COVID, we've lost that ability to do real research, real outreach. We still do it, but nowhere near the capacity that we were doing it before. So we're able to now bring people back in and talk about FSET. We have Dental Familia will come in and make dental appointments for people. You can sign up for W-2 because we're a resource center. Again, just happens to also give food. So bringing people in gives them a way to, and gives us a way to actually also service them in other areas. Do they know about the WIC programs in Kenosha? Do they know about the food share programs in Kenosha? That's what we should be doing to help them more than just handing them a box of food or a bag of food. It's more about the resources that are available to them. Also culturally responsible food, right? Making sure that different cultures that are in our community have access to their culturally, liked food. So that's important to us as well.
This is an amazing, amazing facility. And once again, I think the whole community has role to play. I mean, yes, we need to give you our contributions of time and our gifts of talent and of money to do these services. But there are some other important roles that it's easy to forget. And writing a check is great, but it doesn't help the person down the street or in your congregation or in your PTA that needs help and to be connected to services. So there's an individual and a collective role of the organizations and groups we're affiliated with here too, in terms of bringing people into the orbit of help that you provide. Isn't that so?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, I read a book years ago, and it was talking about how, well, back then it was about the school and how schools can't do it alone. And it is so important that people can't do it alone. So I know schools can't do it alone, but just think about it. You can really say that about any sector, right? Nonprofits can't do it alone. You know, Len, even your radio station, you can't do it alone. It's a partnership, it's a collaboration. And when we learn that people need help and we can, and we have to do our part, it just makes our community a much better place.
Could you tell us a little bit more about some of the programs that you had described with initials? Because I'm not sure all of our listeners know what they are. There's a W-2 and WIC. And the names of some of these programs, like food stamps, SNAP, what have you, have changed so often over the years that some of us older characters may not even connect with what's going on. So why don't you just quickly go
Absolutely.
Over that for us, okay?
No problem, Lynn. I know us, we always laugh, the nonprofits, we're always using acronyms, you know, and we expect everyone to know those acronyms, but you're absolutely right. So WIC, which is W-I-C, WIC is over on 63rd. And so we often send our mothers over there, our mothers that are pregnant, so they can get formula and those kind of things that they need for their infant. And then there is also the food share program, and we call that FSET. And it's a food share program, so that you would also call that Len food stamps or a SNAP. And they get a card with some money on there for them to get groceries and such. Then there's also a W-2 program. Back in the day, Len, you might have heard people say that's the welfare, you know, checks that you get and those kind of things. W-2, and then that's a work program. And so again, there's all these resources that are available to people. And so when you come to pantries, we want to be sure that the individuals that are needing that food know about those programs. There's work programs through EQUS, E-Q-U-U-S. There's a whole workforce development program. And so there's just a whole bunch of stuff. And so we, again, use our opportunity. If you're coming to get food from our pantry, just know that we're a resource center. So we're going to be pushing down other information to you. Do you know about, it's open enrollment for insurance. And so if you're getting state insurance or whatever you're getting, it's open enrollment time. Do you know that? Here's where you can go, right? Partnering with Advocate Aurora, you know, do you have a medical doctor, or partnering with Milch Community Health Center? You know, do you know that these services are available to you? It's so important for us to make sure that we are sharing that. We have Spanish speaking individuals on site that can help those that need a translator, all of those things. They're so important. It goes beyond just food. I think people think that low income and homeless people, all they need is food, and food's going to make it all better. Yes, it will, but there's so many other services that they need.
Well, this is a very sophisticated and appropriate approach to the state of knowledge we have today, which is so much different from the start of my career and the 50s and the 60s models that we used to use, because we didn't know better. But there's been a lot of research and experience generated in the last 60 years. So we know how to do this much better now. And, you know, I think it's important for your donors to know, those financial donors and others who donate their time and talent, to know that this is a experience that people go through. You're not homeless or food insecure forever, usually. This is a journey people go through and exit from, and you provide the resources, the same kinds of resources that we all need in one way or another. I don't know anyone who's really done it by themselves, and The people who I know who are claimed to be self-made millionaires didn't do it themselves. They had a lot of resources along the way, whether they want to give thanks for them or not. So I think that this is really a wonderful thing to support. And I wonder if you could help people understand how best to support you financially, of course, but people want to know, should I be donating clothes? Should I donate shoes? Do they have to be new? Do they have to be used? Does it make sense for me to drop off food, toilet articles, or are those? Is it better for you to get a $10 bill from me because you can buy that stuff in bulk at a discount and get three times as much or more than I could by going to the retail store across the street? Tell us a little bit more about how people can constructively help you, because I think that there are some misapprehensions about that out there, and I certainly had them before I was disabused of them.
Absolutely. So the best thing to do is go to our website at www.shalomcenter.org, because on our website, it gives you all of our items that we allow and will accept as donations. And we update that frequently to allow for our most needed items at the given time. So you can always start there. But you're absolutely right, Len. Giving of your time is, you know, giving and being a donor of Shalom Center is so much more than just your dollars. It's your time and it's also your talents. And so Shalom Center is always looking for volunteers. I'll use my pantry as an example. We have 2.5 employees in our pantry, and they run a 10,000 square feet building and warehouse and pantry store. 2.5 employees, that's it. Everyone else is volunteers. We can't do what we do without our volunteers. In our soup kitchen, I have 3 employees. We can't do it without our volunteers. So if you can give of your time to help us, if you have a, an idea of a fundraiser, if you can't give financially, but you can give of an idea, those are amazing things that we would love. I just met a lady the other day that said, I will be over your golf outing. I'll put it on. I love doing those kind of things. That's amazing, you know? So we love those kind of things. So volunteering. But donations is different. Like I said, going to our website will list all of our donated items that we'll allow. We're not really big on clothes because of storage capacity. So this is where it's important for us to use our partners. So I'm going to give a shout out, if I can, Len, to the ELCA Outreach Center. Carl Erickson over there is amazing. And they have a little clothing store.
Yes.
I didn't say a little clothing store because it's much bigger than a little clothing store. They used to say a clothing closet, but it's much bigger than that. And we ask that people donate to them because of two reasons. They give for free, for one, it's free, to homeless and low-income families. People can go in there and get the things they need for job interviews, for just every day, for kids, for shoes, and it's free. And so we take our clients there. You know, so it becomes like our partnering agency, and we love Outreach Center. They've been really good to us. We share things. Sometimes I'll take it and use what I can and give the rest to him. He'll do the same to us. It's a wonderful partnership, but that's what you need when neither one of us have the space to take it all. We don't usually take clothes. You can call because sometimes we will need some clothes. Especially during the wintertime, we'll need winter jackets and boots and those kind of things. But we definitely partner with the Outreach Center on the clothes area. We have a Shalom the Home starter kit, and you can find all that information on our website. We started it about 3 years ago. We had a wonderful employee. I'll give her a shout out, Sherry Infante. She came up with a wonderful idea of a Shalom the Home starter kit. So every single person that transitions from homelessness to their own place gets our starter kits, which consists of kitchen, bathroom, and cleaning kits. And there are these huge kits. So when you're moving in, Lynn, you're moving in with brand new stuff.
Wow. Wow. So I could sponsor a kit if I wanted to?
You sure could. You could definitely sponsor a kit. And on our website, it gives all the ingredients of the kit. And so we average about $40 per kit is what we're thinking it costs. Most of the items come from the dollar store. We have a couple of churches that actually sponsor kits each month. And so maybe that's a fundraiser that your school or your business or would want to get involved in. Absolutely. We love it.
Well, that's terrific. Anything else that we ought to know? Because people want to help, but we need to know how what's constructive and what doesn't really really help you at all.
Absolutely. Again, I think if everyone would just go to the website, www.shalomcenter.org, to me, that has all of our information. And you can always call 262-658-1713. Any of our staff can help you. But my personal extension is 121. And I take calls all the time, Len. I'm happy to help however I can, direct if they have questions about they want to do a food drive or whatever. We're happy to direct them in the right direction. And it's exciting when the community gets involved.
Well, that's terrific. And congratulations once again on the 40th anniversary of the Shalom Center. I know I'll be seeing a lot of our mutual friends in the community, and I'm sure I'll make some new friends there. I know that you have clients very involved and alumni clients involved in the organization and involved in the governance of the organization and the committee work. And I salute you for that. But there's something else I want to talk to you about. I have here Tamara Coleman, who's wearing two hats right now, as president of the Kenosha Community Health Center and executive director of the Shalom Center, two really big and important organizations in our community. But you have a interesting perspective, and I would be remiss, and my listeners would really be upset with me, if we didn't talk about the fact that you were on the school board, Kenosha Unified School Board. You served from 2012 to 2018. You were reelected. You were president for 4 years. I don't think I would ever run for school board. I think it's one of the most difficult jobs I could imagine. And it's no matter what era I've lived in, it's always a flashpoint for something. So I salute you. You have more guts than I do. I could tell you that right now. You're a tough lady. And I want to know, what are you thinking about schools right now? Oh, just take a minute with me, please. Tamara, first of all, I wonder if you would talk about the topics we've just been talking about, but through the lens of the schools. There are relationships between the schools, the homeless, schooling, and medical care. It seems self-evident to most of us that if you don't have a meal, you're not going to learn in the morning. Do you want to just talk about some of these things and how they interweave and what you've learned?
Absolutely. So, here at the Shalom Center, we have 8 families. So we have children, of course, K through 12, who are in KUSD schools. Kenosha Unified has a school liaison, a homeless liaison, who we partner with to ensure that our kids are enrolled in school immediately entering shelter. And so that liaison makes sure that the kids have what they need for an enrollment side. And then we make sure that they have everything else. So school supplies and proper school clothes and what have you. Kids go to school every day. They're either bused or they walk or however they're getting there. Parents sometimes drive them. School is very important here at the Shalom Center. Our kids are required to be in school within 24 hours of being in shelter. We pride ourselves in that because we know that education is a way out of home, out of poverty. And so we encourage our kids and parents to get right on that. And then loving the Seal a Smile program through the health center, how they're in the schools, making sure the medical dental side is taken care of, especially at the elementary level. And so there's an intermingling twine that goes on, making sure that, you know, mental health is addressed if that's a need, or working with the social workers at the schools for any trauma and whatnot. And again, connecting those resources and services. So there's PSN, Prevention Services Network, or Crisis Intervention Partners, CIP. Those are all those connectors. So if you don't know who they are as case managers here at the Shalom Center, it's going to be hard for our case managers to connect those families to the school partners and the community partners. So it's really important for us to be really weaved together and connected. And that goes on no matter what goes on, Len, outside of all the other hoopla.
Well, that's important. And you get eye care, too. You arrange for eye care because vision problems in early grade levels means you can't read.
Absolutely. And not only eye care, like here at the Shalom Center, we have a whole library of books because reading and math are very important to us. We know that there are some, we know what the statistics say about third grade reading. And so we have books that are grade level appropriate and marked just like they are in the school libraries. So we know where the kids' reading levels are. And so we encourage reading here. We have Carthage students that sometimes come in and do after school tutoring with our kids. We haven't been too successful lately with that because of COVID, but we know that that will come back in our after school succeed program. So all those things are important because we know that we have to keep the kids engaged even while in shelter. We just got a grant, Len, to do some starter kits with kids when they come into shelter. Each child will get a starter kit, and the starter kit is about STEM or STEAM, I should say. So hitting those, that math and that, you know, the STEAM and the arts and that
science, kind of math, stuff. Arts. Yes.
You know all those things. I purged some of that when I got off the school
Tech.
Board.
Tech too. Now, yeah. Can I sponsor one of those too?
You sure can. We just got the grant. It was something that we just thought of during COVID. And so we just wrote a grant to see if it was even viable. And we got the grant and we just got it a couple weeks ago. And so we're going to start doing these kits for the kids when they come in. And it gives them something to kind of look at and focus on to refocus them off of the trauma that might be going on, to get them to kind of calm down a little bit. And there'll be some, you know, stress balls and some crayons and fun things, arts, those things in there to get them to kind of refocus their energy. Then we'll get their case manager on to make sure that there's no trauma and that if they need any extra support, we have that for the child while the case manager is already working with the parents on that situation. So, yeah.
So we can all support that now and when the grant runs out and supplement it with, because that's a really a great concept. But I want you to take a look at now some of the broader school board issues. When you look back, what are the things that you're happy and proud of that got accomplished between 2012 and 2018? And maybe the ones that you think still need to be worked on in general that are tougher issues for the community.
Absolutely. So I feel like between 2012 and 2018, you know, we came off of Act 10. That was our big thing, Len. We were coming off of Act 10 when I first got on the board. We were also transitioning a new a superintendent. Dr. Michelle Hancock was coming off of being superintendent. She was retiring, and we were in the process of having to hire a new superintendent. So a lot of things were happening at once. We also were doing a strategic plan at that time. We were also undergoing, if you remember, the Bradford Stadium and the whole referendum. Yeah, I'm proud of those things. I'm proud of where we left the district in 2018. And mind you, I said left the district in 2018. We were in a very good place. I felt there was cohesiveness. There was collaboration between the staff and the administration. I feel like we were turning a very good page and a new chapter was beginning. I didn't run for a third term, which I was planning to. I had gotten sick. I had some medical issues, and I just was not able to run. And I actually made the decision. I remember, I'll never forget, it was December 24th, and I called Dr. Sue from the hospital.
Oh my God.
After being in the hospital a couple of days before that, and I just couldn't run. At that point, I knew I had to take care of Tamara. And so I wish I would have run one more time. But anyways, we won't go there. I felt like we were in a really good place. We had a good solid board. We were working together, and we didn't start off that way. It was a lot of work and a lot of commitment from each other. We had some amazing accomplishments. That we hired a new superintendent, Dr. Sue Savaglio-Jargas. We had a brand new stadium. We had surplus, you know, with our dollars. We were just in a great spot, Len.
And now what do you think are the issues in terms of the demographics and the changing numbers of students and the changing population and the likelihood of more immigration and refugees coming into the area? What do you think are some of the things people ought to be thinking about in the future in terms of the broad, big,
Absolutely.
Big picture?
So school board funding is totally different than anything that I've ever seen in my life. And I had a background in finance, and the school district, it's totally different. The way it's funded, the way the money comes in, and you have to understand that as a school board member before you can understand how things kind of play out. And your per pupil count is funded by that a little bit. And so when Chris Keckler, I'll just say it, he was very firm with us, and he was firm with this current board, because I've watched a lot of meetings, Len, I'm sure you have too. You know, you see the decrease, you can already plan for it, because you can tell by the birth rate in the county, if it's going down, you already know your kindergarten birth rate will be different in 3 or 4 or 5 years. So sometimes people say, oh, everyone's fleeing the district. That could be some of it, but a lot of it is the birth rate that we talked about 5 years ago, we knew was going to happen in 2022 or 2021. And so those are things that parents may not understand or may not know, that when you're immersed in it every day, you see it and you know it because you're on the board and you hear it. And so that plays a part of it too. The birth rate affects your future growth of a district. I also think that we have become a minority majority district. And so you're going to see